And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. How you all keeping? It is 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 14th of March, 2024. And we're all set for another busy 3 hours of the 9 to noon show. I hope you are too. Loads coming up in the show. Including your voice, your community. That's a new feature for Thursday. That's coming up, and so much more besides. We'll keep you across all the big issues, the big stories affecting this region and further afield as well. As always, we want you involved in that conversation. And you can WhatsApp or text us on 086 60 25000. If you want to send a voice note to that number too, feel free to do so. That's to WhatsApp, of course. If you're dialing from outside the Republic, it's 00353 866 25000. Your telephone calls come in to us on 07491 25000. Caroline taking your calls and email from wherever you are at highlandradio.com, comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch today's show, we're live on X, formerly Twitter, at Highland Radio. We're on YouTube. You can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on YouTube. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland after you've opened the app. And take us wherever you are on Facebook. Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. And new people joining us all the time, by the way, which is wonderful. It's a busy morning for us, and it's a busy morning for papers. We'll start with the Chaconnell Tribune today. A spokesperson for Roadstone Lahey has said that almost all parts of North Donegal are out of bounds for their delivery of ready-mixed concrete products. This effectively challenges the council's own decision to construct social housing in North Donegal, given the clarification that Roadstone Lahey cannot service this area with ready-mix. The Roadstone clarification is due to a time constraint from leaving the quarry until being poured on site to ensure strength, air content and serviceability. At a stretch, we could reach as far as Letterkenny, depending on temperature levels. Otherwise, all parts of the north of the county are beyond our reach due to travel and distance time limits, said a spokesperson at Roadstone Lahey. Their products include concrete for foundations, easy flow screed for underfloor heating, pathways, roads, yards and specified demands, including major marine works in Killybegs. On to the Donegal News, their lead today. Fire crews responding to a major blaze in Castlefin at the weekend had to travel 2 miles to access a working fire hydrant, it has been claimed. It's understood firefighters attended the fire at Tinney's Bar on Sunday, struggling to get access to water from the nearest hydrant due to low pressure. As a result, fire crews were left with no other choice but to travel almost 2 miles to Liscooley to access water in a bid to extinguish the flames. Unfortunately, we're seeing that all too often, aren't we? We've had that the situation in at least 2 house fires and now a fire at a commercial premises. And still, I was suggesting at that time we need to do a proper audit. Where is the water? Is it accessible? What's the pressure like? It would be a logical thing to do, I'd imagine, especially for fire crews when they have to cross the border and may not have a greater local knowledge as our own fire crews do, if you get where I'm coming from. The Derry News this morning, residents in the Belmont area of the city have been left fearful following a targeted arson attack which destroyed a van and 3 cars. The terrifying incident occurred in Greenon Drive, a quiet residential area, at around 11:30 p.m. on Monday. On to the Irish Times now and their lead today. Extra 500 beds identified for migrants as thousands of Ukrainians leave hotels. And I've been saying this on the show for a wee while now, is that the whether it's policy or personal decisions, far less, I said anecdotally, far less Ukrainians seemingly in quite a few hotels. That seems to be being backed up by figures official today. An audit of emergency accommodation for migrants has found about 500 extra beds, despite thousands of Ukrainians leaving their accommodation, while hundreds of asylum seekers remain unaccommodated. Figures compiled by the Department of Integration show there are 4,300 fewer Ukrainians in hotels and other serviced accommodation compared with the start of the year, while 1,260 people seeking international protection remain unaccommodated. A spokesperson for Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, said the department had sourced several hundred beds with providers who are contracted to house Ukrainians, which can be converted to accommodation for asylum seekers. I would say a lot of the Ukrainians are moving into the private residential market. That's what I would guess in any case. But there seems to be no big move, if there are effectively 4,000 plus extra beds, no big move to replace the Ukrainians with international protection applicants. Roderick O'Gorman said, "We've undertaken an audit of capacity and started engaging with providers and have identified an initial several 100 beds which can be converted." That's a spelling error on the front page. Remarkable. Okay. On to the Irish Independent now. And Fianna Fáil's candidate for Limerick mayor is a former Fine Gael member who previously described Tánais na Mícheál Martin as not a leader and posted a slew of comments criticising her new party on social media. Dee Ryan, the former chief executive of Limerick Chamber, was confirmed on Monday as Fianna Fáil's candidate for the country's first directly elected mayor contest in Limerick, where she was pictured alongside Mr. Martin. Ms. Ryan, who resigned from the Chamber of Commerce to contest the mayoral election in June, was a strong supporter of Fine Gael in the run-up to and after the 2016 general election. According to her social media activity, it's understood she is a former member of Fine Gael and was also previously a member of Labour. So it's one of those weeks, isn't it, where lots of politicians are changing their minds. She didn't think Micheál Martin was a leader. Wasn't too fond of Fianna Fáil either, but now she is running for Fianna Fáil in the Limerick mayoral election. Do you remember at the time when there was a vote of no confidence that was affecting the government, and then there were negotiations and the independents came on board with them? And at that time, I remember quite clearly saying we should know, because it's taxpayers' money being used. I don't know if you remember this, but that we should know what the deal is. Like, what do the independents receive for supporting the government? Because they said effectively, right, let's talk. We might back you, get you over the line, but what's in it for us? And I think at the time that information should be made freely available, because it's bartering with our money, effectively taxpayers' money. Well, as it turns out, the Irish Daily Mail has been doing some digging on this, as they have the resources I don't have, and they've described it as a grubby deal by the government to secure votes from independent TDs to support lifting the eviction ban cost €12 million. That's how much it cost to defeat or for the government to survive. Internal documents obtained by the Mail reveal the risks associated with meeting the demand of the regional independence group on the four fair deal scheme, to which government bowed in a scramble to secure the support in the crunch vote last March. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly was warned that the vote deal with the independents could undermine the financial stability of the nursing home cost scheme. However, he forced through the changes demanded by regional TDs in a deal agreed with Housing Minister Dara O'Brien. He was in on it too. Mr Donnelly sanctioned the change despite his department's Secretary General Robert Watt urging the minister to bring the proposal back to government for final decision. Mr Donnelly insisted they proceeded as requested weeks ago. So the cost of independent support in that instance, €12 million. And that there are other instances too where negotiations went on. That should be fully divulged to the public before any votes even or any decisions are made, in my opinion. But maybe I'm an outlier. The Irish Farmers Journal, entitlement sales are expected to soar this year as trading intensifies ahead of the 15th of May BISS application deadline. This comes as the Department of Agriculture confirms it plans to end the two-year amnesty on the 20% clawback that applies on the sale of entitlements without land. On to the Star, and it's just a tiny wee paragraph, but when you hear the significance of the words, the fact it's a tiny wee paragraph, this would have been the front page of every newspaper, I think 20 years ago. I don't know if it's that people aren't interested in putting on the front page, or like many people don't think Vladimir Putin would follow through on any of his threats. But anyway, President Vladimir Putin has said Russia is ready to use nuclear weapons if there is a threat to Russians' statehood, sovereignty or independence. Putin also said he hoped the US would refrain from actions that could trigger a nuclear conflict. His statement is another blunt warning to the West ahead of a presidential vote this week in which he is all but certain to win another six-year term. In an interview with Russian state television released early yesterday, Putin described US President Joe Biden as a veteran politician who fully understands the possible dangers of escalation and said he does not think the world is heading to a nuclear war, which is quite comforting a little bit down in that article. Hundreds of mourners will gather in Dublin City today to celebrate the life of the late Charlie Bird. The beloved journalist died aged 74 on Monday following a battle with motor neuron disease. His family announced a service to celebrate Charlie's life will be held on Thursday at 12 noon in the Round Room Mansion House, Dublin 2. There is some limited public access to that. And finally, in the Mirror, Irish Eurovision hopeful Bambi Thug has said they don't practice Satanism, which is good, only witchcraft, which is probably bad. But they do respect Satanists, adding, the ones they know live in light and are so kind. Last month, RTE refused to say whether the word Satan was hidden in Ireland's Eurovision entry, Doomsday Blue, after the singer suggested they were occult messages concealed in the track. So while she is, or they is, not a Satanist, they do practice witchcraft. All right. Now, just to give you a reminder, actually an early reminder, a heads up, I would love to see us really making a start on our auction today. There is a special day of programming tomorrow. It's Highland Radio's Big Birthday Bash, supporting three brilliant local charities, namely the Irish Wheelchair Association, Jigsaw and Breast Centre Northwest. We're hoping to all together raise money for these great organisations. And there's a nice little mix of programming tomorrow. It's completely different to what you might expect. The 6.30 to 9am slot, I'll do up to lunchtime and then do after lunchtime later. The 6am to 9am slot, Jimmy Stafford and Paul McDevitt are in studio for Naughty Friday morning sessions. Not too naughty, boys. They've got a number of guests, of course, taking part in that show. John Breslin's on between 9 and 10. Funny you should say that. It's a panel of comedians, Conal Gallan, Pádraig Gallagher and Paddy Brown. It's a Friday panel with a difference, don't you agree? Then between 10 and 11, me and Lee Gooch are going to be hosting an auction, and I'm going to tell you more about that in a little later on. At the same time, running from 10am to 12 noon, we have a coffee morning here at Highland Radio, so please call up. Between 11 and 12 noon, that's entertainment with a difference with Fionnuala Rabbit, her guests Maria Rush, Michael Eddy and Noel Cunningham. And then from 12 to 1pm, it's Donal Kavanagh, Canis Wilson and Aidan Murphy. A nostalgia hour. Really challenge you as regular listeners. How well do you know Highland Radio? I'll talk about the afternoon a little later on. But me and Lee tomorrow on air between 10 and 11 and we have auctions and we have some fantastic prizes, and I would really love, I'm going to read some of them for you right now, and I'd really love just some early bids on these lots just to get things going. You can give us a call here on 07491 25000. If you're interested in bidding on any of the following lots, as I say, you could get early, you could go in early, but all of the money that you would bid on these lots, just to be very, very clear, all of the money goes directly to the Irish Wheelchair Association, Jigsaw and Breast Centre Northwest. And I think there's no one listening to me right now that isn't in some way either engaging with those services or know someone that is, because they're so important. Now, one of the lots is Dinner for Eight with Chef Gary O'Hanlon. He's a world-renowned chef whose career is only going on the up, up, up. The lot includes Dinner for Eight in your home with food and drink supplied. So award-winning, internationally renowned chef Gary O'Hanlon will go into your home and cook dinner for eight people. So we have a bid at the moment for €1,500 on that. If you were to book Gary O'Hanlon for a couple of hours, you're talking double that, right? So it's a very valuable prize. So if you can beat 1500 on that, give us a call on 07491 25000. We've got an overnight stay in Harvey's with dinner included for two people. If you fancy bidding on the Harvey's lot, give us a call again, 07491 25000. Overnight in Harvey's with dinner included for two. We've got 20 ton of decorative stone and delivery from GM Stone. So if you want to bid on GM Stone, 07491 25000. Sunday lunch for four in Harvey's. If you want to bid on that, lunch, Give us a call on 07491 25000. We've got a three-night stay in the Wild Atlantic Camp, which would be wonderful. Three nights, whenever you like, subject to availability. If you want to bid on that, and start low if you wish, you never know, please give us a call on 07491 25000. And if you've ever tried to book McNean House and Restaurant, this is Nevin Maguire's restaurant, you will know how difficult that can be. In some cases, not wishing to discourage anyone from trying, there might be late availability, but you can be waiting weeks, if not months. We've got dinner for two at Nevin Maguire's restaurant, McNean House and Restaurant. So if you would like to bid on that, please give us a call on 07491 25000. There'll be much more of that tomorrow, but I just wanted to put that out there in case anything caught your ear and you have a few euro, you'd get to do something nice or receive something nice and support at the same time the Irish Wheelchair Association, Jigsaw and Breast Centre Northwest. We're joined on the programme now by Leah. Leah, sorry for everything you and your family are going through. Jordan now has been missing for almost 2 weeks. How are you coping? Are you okay, as best as can be expected?
Aye, best as to be expected, Greg. We're just trying to soldier on as best as possible and hope that we find him soon.
Yeah, for sure. Can you tell us what we know as to what happened to Jordan and when?
Well, Jordan went missing on Saturday, the 2nd of March. Approximately 9:15 p.m., he was seen entering the water near his grandmother's house in the Ballycommon area.
And since then, a search has been ongoing to bring Jordan home.
Yeah, the search has been ongoing since that Sunday then. And we're just really looking to put out a family appeal to try and get as many people on board as possible.
Mm-hmm. All right, stay with me, Leah, because Colin McDade is part of the search team and maybe he'll pick it up here just to let the public know how they can help, because it has to be done in a obviously a very organised and routine way. Colin, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Leah. Yes, Greg, I say that the ongoing search now since the 2nd of March, there's multi-agencies involved in it, but they have a specific job to do. But it's eyes on the water at this stage, that we need people that's out walking, people that usually be on the river banks. Anything they see unusual, just to contact the police or the Gardaí, depending on what side they're on, and some of the emergency services then will react and go and check stuff out. People coming to the searches with an appeal to people to come in out of bank holiday weekend. People will have a bit of extra time. And, you know, if you're going for a walk, go in groups, don't come alone. Mm-hmm. Wear proper clothing. We get people at the start, they just want to help. It's a natural thing, but they're landing with a pair of runners on them to the riverbank. You need Wellington boots. You need good walking boots or good walking shoes. Bring wet gear with you. High-vis if possible. A communication device, and stay together in groups. But we would appeal to people to go onto the page, Bring Jordan Home page. There's times on there where people are meeting. There's safety briefings given. You're going to get people doing their own thing anyway, Greg, and we, you know, me or you can't stop that. Mm-hmm. But we would rather do it in a coordinated approach. It's more beneficial to the agencies involved. It's more beneficial to the family. The family are coordinating all this, which gives them something to do. It's a sense of belonging. You know, we're all out there for the one thing, and that's to bring Jordan home. And we want to get Jordan home as quickly as we can.
Colin, what would be the search area? I mean, obviously, you've been involved in this type of searches before, but you know, maybe the sort of general public might not be aware of, you know, what distance we're covering upstream, downstream, that type of stuff. Can you just go through that, so if people do want to get involved, that they're looking in the right place as much as we can determine?
It can be a massive area, Greg. We've got Jordan entered the River Mourne, which flows on at Clifford Bridge is joined by the fin onto the foil. Now, very, very fast flowing water, very, very dangerous water. We were blessed more or less last week, you know, we had very dry weather, but there's massive spring tides. So the river bank is very dangerous. So people, if you have a flotation device, there's no harm putting it on you either. But the area in Kilburn, I say that the volume of water coming down the moorn and down the fan onto the foil, you're working on a massive radius, and we can't really put a point if we're working within 2 miles, we're working within 3 miles. It's a massive river with a massive flow. As I say, these massive spring tides at the moment are pushing up, and it's tidal right up the moorn, right up the fan. There's a possibility it could go either way or down the foil. People who do not know the river, we would want to keep them away from certain places like the islands and Port Hall, and let people who are used to that area do that. From Lifford Bridge, both sides, the back, you can enter down by the cinema in Lifford, or you can enter just at Lifford Bridge. That river bank can be walked down a good bit. That would be well within the catchment area we would expect him still to be in. Mm-hmm. So we'll be concentrating on that, as well as the morning parts of the fun. But if the accessibility, sorry, Greg, to the river, you know, we don't want people endangering themselves, because that causes a separate problem. And people have to be very, very careful along the riverbank. We need the help. We need the eyes. But people, a big thing that I've mentioned to a few people, Greg, and it's, I suppose, the society at the moment, a lot of people walk on the riverbank more interested in the screen than their phone. Put your phone in your pocket and watch where you're going. Watch trip hazards. You know, there's animals there too, so you've got to be very, very careful. You know, the landowners have been very generous to us, giving us access to their land. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you open the gate, close the gate, you know, stuff like that. It's more or less common sense. And if people want a bit of exercise, fresh air, come on ahead and give us a hand.
You're also the experienced kayakers, those who, and many people do now, have access to, drones. And I mean drones of a certain standard and what have you. Is the appeal for their assistance still out there?
The kayakers, yes. We have a great team of kayakers going. There's rescue teams as well, have experienced kayakers. But the word experience, Greg, needs to be pushed here. I don't want somebody that's just bought a kayak for paddling around the beach, and we don't want them on the river because the river is far too dangerous. If you're an experienced kayaker, well and good. But if you're just a leisure kayaker who's not used to working on currents or working on big tides, we would appeal to them people not to come near the river. As for the drones, we have enough drones out. There's emergency teams with drones. We have members of the public who have been known to the family, and how, put it in a better word, they're level-headed, Greg. We just don't want somebody, I have a drone, I'm going to look, because we don't want footage going on social media. Mm-hmm. Are being portrayed the wrong way, in a negative way.
Okay.
So the drones, no, stay away from the drones. Like, we have enough drones there. They're a fantastic tool, but they have to be used in the right hands. Mm-hmm. And I say for the kayaker safety, if you're not an experienced kayaker, you know, I would rather they wouldn't be on the water.
Okay. Leah, it's clear since Jordan went missing how highly he's thought of. His former teammates, obviously his family and friends, and the wider community, a very well thought of young man.
He was certainly, yeah. He was a very loved young fellow now.
And at this point, Leah, I think anyone listening will understand why. You just want to be able to bring him home now, not to be anywhere on his own.
It's just the thought of Jordan being out there alone in the dark water just breaks our hearts every day. Having to leave the river bank at night is just heartbreaking.
Okay, Leah.
But each morning we get that wee bit more hope when we wake. That day might be the day.
Okay, Leah, I hope you know that everyone's thinking on you and sending you as much strength and love as they can to get through this incredibly difficult time for you and all the family and friends as well, too. Everyone's deeply affected by this, I know that. Leah, thanks for joining us, and I just hope there is positive news in the search for Jordan very, very soon.
Thanks very much, Greg, for having me on.
No, thank you, Leah. And Colm, thank you for helping us to sort of lay out the search and the pattern of that search and what's useful and what is not. We do appreciate your time, and fair play to you and everybody else involved in that search with a review to recovering Jordan and getting him back into the loving embrace of his family.
No problem, Greg. Just one last thing, Greg. Appealing for people at night time to stay off the riverbanks. It's hazardous at night time, and leave it to ourselves. We have teams that can go out at dark, out in the dark. You know, we don't want people down along the riverbank with flash lamps, but it's a multi-agency, both sides of the border. They're coming from all over the country. We're getting good support, but it's the public can step on here. Any way they think, you just get in contact with the girl, Leah, on the page. And we appreciate everybody's help, and we appreciate the time at Highland Radio giving us this morning to put a wee bit of push on it. So thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Colm. Take care of yourself and be safe, as Colm will be. He's a professional in this area. But those with the best will in the world in assisting, we don't want another tragedy on top of tragedy already. So heed the advice, and hopefully there's a positive outcome to that very, very soon. Thanks very much, by the way. A number of bids coming in for the auction, which is officially tomorrow, but it's great to get a start on it, and thanks to your generosity. I'll run through the lots a little later on. Also later on today, we're going to be going around and plugging and promoting the various St. Patrick's Day celebrations. We had a huge response to it, perhaps slightly larger than we were anticipating, so we're having to dedicate quite a bit of time to that. But why not? To support the efforts of the great people out there in the community organising activities for us for the weekend. Right, OK, on to back to more serious matters now, and I'm joined by Kevin on the programme. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
How are you doing, Greg?
I'm doing all right. I'll just let you say what you want to say, Kevin, rather than me sort of trying to preempt it. It's born of frustration, I would say, and born of love of your son. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I've actually two sons. I was listening to the radio yesterday, and they were on about flying the flag, the European flag, outside the schools, and there was a few youth workers on. I thought, you know, it was a good time to bring this up. I've two kids who like neurological conditions, ADHD, ASD, and one of them has Tourette's syndrome. But we've had a long road trying to get them diagnosed, and they've been going to school and they've had a lot of trouble. You know, we've had school refusals, and we've had attendance officers ringing us, and we're just constantly battling with the school all the time. And the lack of understanding from not all the teachers, I'm not here to run down the schools or the teachers, but there is out there still teachers resistant to change against these conditions. You know, they put it down to bad behaviour. They don't put it down to their sensory issues, their processing, you know, overwhelming of noise. And, you know, they just seem to think these children are acting out of bad behaviour, you know, but it's kind of frustrating. Me and my wife's been on this road for 4 years now, and it's just still the same. There's no change.
And you talk and I can understand where you're coming from. You know, our schools, there's great efforts to make our schools, you know, accepting, inclusive, to accommodate different, you know, all different types of sexuality, gender, culture. Yeah. That's not an issue. That's not what you're talking about. But then when it comes to your sons, ASD, ADHD, and Tourette's, that same you're not feeling that same level of acceptance and desire to include them.
Yeah, well, like, we had to go through, you know, various assessments that cost me a lot of money. I had it cost me thousands of pounds to get my kids diagnosed, and, you know, it was a long road. There were waiting lists and different, and, you know, the services is busting at the seam. And, you know, for my sons to be accepted in the school environment, I needed all these reports and assessments and constantly get in and out of the school. But if they had went in to the school as non-binary or a day that or whatever they wanted to be, I'm not against that. I'm all for that, you know. But we needed to spend so much money and go through so much hardship to get our kids accepted, and they're still not being accepted yet. These issues are still, you know, it's just certain teachers are reluctant to the change. putting it down to, you know, like bad manners and not listening. But when you have a kid with sensory profile and an audio processing disorder, Tourette's syndrome, you have to see the bigger picture. You know, it's them navigating through a school day for them. It's a big, big challenge for them. And every day they get up, they should commend it for going into school. You know, for being so brave, for, like, it's, they don't get the help that they need.
So for even though this is a diagnosed conditions that your children have, it's not self-declared, for example, or it is diagnosed, and even though you can prove that with paper, you're saying that they're not being accepted for who they are, i.e. accommodated for maybe additional needs that they might have. That's what you're feeling?
Oh, exactly. Like, well, I had one principal actually saying to me, like, that he asked me, how could he punish my son for having a Tourette's outburst? What way could he punish him? Or, you know, what sanctions could he use? And he should have some control over it. Like, this is a condition that you have, and it's involuntary, you know, outbursts of maybe swearing or movement, or it could be anything. They still think that this point system that they have in schools and, you know, the VS, where they write these things down, when they accumulate so many points, then they get punished. They don't get the trips. My son's been at school for 4 years now, and he hasn't gone on a school trip once.
But do you think, does part of you think that maybe a point system is being used to avoid the hassle of him going on a trip? And I'm not using the word hassle. I'm not using the word hassle. Like, I don't see it that way. But I'm just wondering, as a dad, do you think that, all right, well, this is handy because now he doesn't have to be accommodated on a trip?
Of course it is. Of course it's too much hassle for them. You see my two boys, they're high functioning. You know, they are quite sociable, but when you peel the layers away there, you can see it. Like, if you've seen them walking down the street, you wouldn't think there's anything wrong with them until you actually meet them and sit down with them. But they're very good at masking as well. But, like, I went into numerous meetings with the principal, the vice principal. I even had, like, a mediator from Pushta there. And it was just kind of like a witch hunt then. Once I started to ask questions and try and resolve the problems, I felt like it was a witch hunt. The teachers upped their game. They were under heavy surveillance. They're being watched for minor things. So that even like things that normal kids would do, you know, wouldn't be out of the way. Like, they weren't hurting anybody. They weren't, dangerous.
So just to be clear, your son has Tourette's, and Tourette's presents itself in many different ways, tics or verbal outbursts or whatever. So are you saying even now still, or has that been resolved? So if he has an outburst which people might find offensive, is he seen as being is he being treated as if he's bold or naughty or what? Like, it's not accepted that this is really still to this day.
This is happening now, just in the school now. It's not.
Yeah, no, I get that.
A lot
of
people out there, the public have a big understanding of it. Like, people's very aware of it, but it seems to be, when it goes into the school and into the classroom and behind closed doors, it seems to be a problem then. Like when you have a principal coming, he's supposed to be an educator. When they are looking for students to join their school, they're advocating that they're a great school for inclusion and, you know, everybody's welcome. But then when it comes down to it, when you get in there and this child's in the school, then it all changes. The whole thing's out the window. All the reports you have, all the psychology information, just don't seem to want to listen to it. It's just, you're just knocking on deaf ears, you know?
Yeah, okay, which is very difficult for the boys, but very difficult for the wider family as well. Okay.
My oldest son ended up in Peterhouse twice over the head of it.
Right.
And, you know, it was very hard for me and his mother to see our child going through this, you know.
I can imagine.
Just down to a handful of teachers. There were some great teachers out there, very understanding.
What's the solution, Kevin? In this part of the world, it's impractical to often sometimes move children between schools and what have you. But, like, how do you hope to resolve this if you see a pathway to resolving it?
I just think when parents go to school with an issue with a teacher, Like, we're not going there to cause the trouble. We're going there to try. Like, we felt that it was a witch hunt against us after we made a few. We had a few meetings with them and we made a few suggestions. It was kind of like, you're not going to tell us what to do. We're going to do it our way.
Yeah.
And then if you don't get anywhere in the meetings or you don't get anywhere with psychology reports, then you have to go to a board of management where the board of management is the chairman of the board of management is the principal, and then maybe you have a few other teachers on that from maybe another school. You know, and really the outcomes of the board of management, you never ever side with the parents. It's, you know, you get nowhere. So I think there should be an independent body set up for parents to go to make these issues, to, you know, to clear these issues without, you know, the school being involved.
I've heard these similar calls for parents whose children have been bullied as well, too. I really appreciate you helping us highlight this, Kevin, and it'll be interesting to see if this resonates with many people listening out there today. I hope things improve. As a parent, we feel it's so personally and it's so hurtful, as well as what the boys are going through. I understand that. But I just appreciate you talking to us, and I hope it's helped that maybe you've got it off your chest publicly. And we'll see what others say. Okay, Kevin?
But just think, I definitely do think now the board of management is a waste of time for parents. Anybody going to a board of management to make a complaint, they're just absolutely wasting their time. We were told by the school when we asked for how do we make a complaint, the chairperson of the board of management told us they didn't know, but we kept pressing them, and eventually they sent us out. We couldn't get the paperwork, or we couldn't get the stuff on the website how to make a complaint. So we contacted the chairperson, and they told us they weren't sure, but then they contacted us back a day later to say that they would be sending us out a letter to let us know how to move forward with the actual complaint.
Yeah, okay. Listen, Kevin, thank you for your time this morning. If you can relate to Kevin, or any advice, even not that he's seeking it, but anything that you might think might be helpful, please get in touch with us, 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text, or call an 07491 25000. Right, James is with us now. James is from Rosnalla Surf School. How are you getting on, James?
Greg, all good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to talk to you as well. And the old issue of toilets at Rosnalla Beach. We were talking about this, I think, last year or the year before. The ones that are there can sometimes be unusable. It is the county's busiest beach. Do you think it sort of gets the resources it deserves?
Look, we got a bit of money off the council to do a bit of work there 4 years ago or so, you know. But now it's kind of time to fit the music about the toilets and Rosnalla. It's about time we got our next stage of help. As you know, it is the busiest beach in the county, like, and we're only serviced by a few portaloos there at the minute. So, you know, the portaloos have been overflowing in the middle of January, so you can only imagine what it would look like in the summer, Greg. But hopefully we do get some form of funding for a toilet block. It's about time, you know.
James,
like,
there not a permanent toilet block there going back 20 or 30 years ago? I seem to remember, or maybe I'm thinking of somewhere else, but I thought there was.
Yeah, I think there was, you know, probably before my time, to be honest. I'm 30 now, but I think there was definitely something there, a public toilet. But look, like, it's kind of obvious. Portaloos aren't going to do the job, you know. Hopefully this is the push we need now. Just to keep pressure on the council and everything. And thankfully, Michael McMahon and Niamh Cabinet Kennedy have been bringing it into the pushing it for us. So thank you so much to them. And hopefully this is the start now for the wee push we need. Have you been in Rosnalla recently, Greg?
Well, relatively recently.
Nice, So you're aware of the toilet situation?
Oh, well, listen,
and
come here. It's been highlighted on this program on numerous occasions, James. At one point, we were sent pictures of the state of the poor to lose, and I wish we weren't. Very quickly, very quickly, they become unusable. They become completely unusable very, very quickly. The thing about it is, is though, it's not just the provision of public toilets. I think sometimes really what the big issue is, because they're easily enough provided, it's their upkeep and maintenance. And sometimes I think we avoid providing services because we don't have a plan to service them. We take bins away because you have to empty them.
That is a good point, actually, and that's the point a lot of people bring up, you know, who's going to service them. But at the moment, actually, we know that we can get people through a certain, I don't know what it is, but we can get two people, you know, locally that are there at the moment and will be there going into the future to service them. Okay. So it isn't really much of an issue. The council have said there's ways around that, and we have access to getting those people to help.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's no excuses really for us at all down there.
I mean, there's a lot of money has been, and rightly so, there's a lot of money has been put into Sleeve League, new toilet blocks and what have you. I would, it'd be interesting to compare the number of visitors to Sleeve League versus Ross Nowler.
There has funding put into the West.
All right, James, listen, we're losing the link there. I'm going to let you go. Unfortunately, the phone lines this morning have been absolutely brutal. That was James, though, from Rosnada Surf School. He's created this petition. Lots of people from the north of the county, Derry and Tyrone as well, go down to visit Rosnada and the Bundoran area throughout the summer. You'd know what the toilet block is like down there, the toilets that are down there. They're poor to lose. They're disgusting. If you're interested in signing this petition, there is a big push on at the moment. It's being raised at local council level. You can go to the Rosnada Surf School Facebook page, or we'll provide a link on our socials if you wish to sign that uplift petition. Thanks to James there. Apologies for the phone going, unfortunately. All the best to St. Catherine's Band from Killybegs, who are leading the Donegal Society on St. Patrick's Day in the New York Parade. Have fun. Lovely stuff, okay? And good morning, Greg. Can you please wish our little Miss Mary, Katie Gallagher, a very happy birthday, and I hope that she thoroughly enjoys her time in New York this St. Patrick's weekend. Lots of love from Carol, your fairy godmother. A car key was lost on Monday morning this week in Letterkenny between the Market Square and Sister Sarah's. If you found a car key, obviously it's no use to you. If you found a car key on Letterkenny or in Letterkenny between Market Square and Sister Sarah's, the owner has been in touch with us. They'd be very keen to get it back. Could you please give a mention to our annual coffee morning, bric-a-brac and raffle? It's in Glenvar Old School on St. Patrick's Day from 11 a.m. and is from 11 a.m. onwards, and is in aid of small animal welfare. Please support this worthy cause. Prizes galore, we're told. Thank you. So that's in Glenvar Old School, St. Patrick's morning at 11 a.m, which is a nice time, I think, to have these types of things. And just before 10, could you wish Kathleen McGee from Mean Lara Gorta Hawk a happy birthday from Lionel, Rachel and Emma, and our own, that's another Kay McGee, Katie McGee, from Highland Radio, is celebrating her birthday today, though she's not in for us to make fun of in a very nice way, to make fuss of, let me say, to make a fuss of. Katie's not here today, but it is her birthday, so a big happy birthday to you, Katie. I really do appreciate it. Right, only time for a very brief conversation, if that's okay, Michelle. Michelle, have a minute or two. If you want longer, I can speak to you after 10. Are you happy to squeeze in your point now?
No, a minute or two is fine, Greg.
All right. You were listening to Kevin. What's your view?
Yeah, I know I missed the start of it, but I have to totally agree with Kevin, and I sympathise with him. But unfortunately, like him, we don't have a diagnosis for our child at the minute, but we're going through a very difficult time with him. Now, it's not alone in school, but at home as well. But I just feel at the minute that, like he said, that they see the child maybe as being bold rather than suffering like he is.
Yes, so in other words, rather than being understood, he's actually, the situation is made worse because he's being seen as bold when really what he needs is further assistance.
Yeah, now don't get me wrong, the school have moved heaven and earth for him, but it's the waiting list that we all face at the minute. It's months upon months waiting for these children to be seen and to get help.
Yeah.
It's not fair on them because they're the ones that are left suffering. And not alone that, the child obviously has other siblings and us as a family are suffering and dealing with it as well.
You also resonated with you when he mentioned his issues with boards of management.
Yeah, no, I haven't had made big dealings with the board of management as of yet, but I do feel that there is no big backing for the parent. And in regards to what he says, you don't know where to turn for support. There's nobody out there to help us and guide us as to what's the next step or where do we go for our child for help, because the child is fully entitled to an education. And as he said, these schools are crying in for students and that they're open and they're inclusive and all that there. But then when they're faced with difficult situations, sometimes things completely change for us as parents and the children.
Who are you dealing with, not the individual, but the organisation waiting to get a diagnosis, Michelle?
I have tried all avenues.
Right. Okay.
NEPs and private psychologists. I can't get any. I've even taken my child to the hospital and have had no avail.
And what age is he, if you don't mind me asking?
8 and a half.
Okay, all right. So it's a critical part of his learning life as well. All right, Michelle. It's an awful situation. And listening to Kevin, even if you do get a diagnosis, it's not a silver bullet in the school environment, seemingly.
Yeah. And I know, it's not a magic wand by getting a diagnosis. I know that. But then at least we might know with what we're dealing with. But I'm very glad that this topic was brought up today because it kind of, it helps us that we're not the only one going through this and struggling.
Well, that's what we're here for. And I don't mind giving over a whole show to talk about this, Michelle, if it helps people like you. So anyone else who wishes to get in contact with us to talk about this, please do, if it is at all helpful. Michelle, thanks very much for your time. And I definitely will come back to you if anyone else is interested in talking about it. All right, back after the news and obituary notices. The news a little late, but I just wanted to hear Michelle.